Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome, and thank you for listening in. My name is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance on Blog Talk Radio, and tonight I am just delighted that I will be giving away a copy of Neverwild, The Rim of the World, Book 2. It's a new release and giveaway. I'm going to be reading an excerpt from it, and at the end, I will be giving away a copy of Neverwild. You can pick from your whatever format you want. I can give it to you in either for Mobi and Kindle, EPUB for Nook, or as a PDF file. So it'll be your choice. If you'd like to call in and talk to me about this book or about any other forthcoming books, please do. The number is 646-727-2932. If you have a question for me, you can come to the chat room. Chat room's open, and you can drop your question in there. Or if you're listening online, you can email me your question, linda@lindamooney.com. And I'm going to answer a few questions about Neverwild that I've gotten from readers. And that is this a series? Yes, it will be a series. But I'm looking at Neverwild in not so much as a series of books, even though it does have the same hero and heroine in it, kind of along the lines of my Battlelord series. Now, that's an actual series, but I'm looking at Neverwild along the lines of like a television show where each book is like an episode, but more than like an hour episode, more like an hour and a half, 2 hour episode. But that's how I, in my head, am envisioning it as I'm working on it. And so Neverwild, the book 3 will be coming out early next year. I like to place the books about 3 to 4 months apart. So how long am I going to keep this going? I don't know. But I love writing about Kyber and Kellen and the problems they have on their world and problems they will discover. So be prepared. If you like this series, there will be more coming. All right. I'm going to begin with reading the blurb to Neverwild Book 2. Stranded on a half-world in an unknown galaxy, 7 Terrans and 4 Phoenicians have declared an uneasy truce. But when 3 more Phoenicians arrive at the temple, including their leader, thought to be dead, the balance of power suddenly shifts. The Phoenician Dahar immediately assumes command, and he makes it clear the Terrans are now under his jurisdiction. Everyone must obey his rule as he takes full control of their weapons, their lives, and the only female, Kellen. But when Kyber announces that he and Kellen have mated, Kyber is banished from their midst. What follows is a harrowing ordeal as Kellen Chambliss fights to be reunited with the Phoenician who has claimed her heart, and Kyber struggles to survive long enough to get her back. Worse than losing his life would be to lose the woman he loves. Warning: contains pink crackers, tyrannical commanders, click, twinkling lights, secret tunnels, scorch marks, and 2 people determined to break all the rules if it means they can be together. All right, I'm going to begin reading, starting with chapter 2. Book 1 ends where they are in the lower chambers where the pools are located. This is past the lakes. And they have decided that they are going to go back up to the main area where the little apartment-like rooms are located. And they have to get there first. She had no idea how long she sat there. There were a couple of times her butt got sore. When she couldn't take it any longer, she'd stand and walk over to the thick wooden door and place her ear against it to listen. She tried to keep her imagination from creating more insidious monstrosities that were ready to attack the small band of survivors. "Hey, Gail, what time is it?" She glanced behind her to see Jules sitting up and grinning at her. He knew she was as oblivious to the time as he was. They had yet to discover how many hours constituted a full day and night for this half-world, and being underground gave them no clue as to whether it was light or dark outside. "As if it matters," the ex-navigator added before she could reply. "I'm sure if you asked, Docs could make us a clock of some sort," she told him. Both of them glanced over to where the little man lay curled up amid his collections of odds and ends that he'd brought with them from their crashed ship. Jules waved off her suggestion. "I prefer a reliable pulse rifle right now." "Wouldn't we all?" Mallory sat up, passing gas at the same time. He didn't apologize, but no one expected him to. The simple niceties of civilization had been abandoned the moment they crash-landed. "Anything?" he asked Kellen. She shook her head. "No, nothing. Not even a slither."
"Who do you relieve?"
"Me." Tiber smoothly got to his feet and stretched. Kellen tried not to stare at the way his muscles bunched and undulated beneath his short fur, but she couldn't help but notice the way he limped when he started toward the door, as did the doctor who, like the rest, began rousing himself.
"I want to check on that wound, Kyber," the man ordered.
"I'm fine."
"Go ahead and let the doc check it," Fulgrath grumbled. "There's few enough of us as it is. We don't need someone getting sick with an infection because they were too hard-headed to admit they needed medical attention."
Seeing that others around him were giving him a surprised look, the man shrugged.
"What? So I speak from experience. What gives?"
"What is our mission for today?" Masapa spoke up. Like Kyber, he got to his feet and stretched. Kellen got the impression it was almost ceremonial. Gavir answered,
"I thought we were going to return to the first inner chamber where we found the pile of bones."
"That's what I understood," Jules cooperated. "Clean out that nest of eyeworms once and for all and see if we can't make some sort of permanent headquarters out of it, right?"
Nanika, everyone looked over to where Dox was twirling a length of tubing between his fingers.
"What, Nanika, Dox?" Mallory questioned.
"The chamber with the dead. It's a nonagon. Center area for meetings. Living quarters around it." He peered up at the many nonagons down there.
"And you know that how?" Gavir asked.
Docs pointed to the wall. "Written down." "Docs, do you know how many nonagons are over there?"
"No."
The little man suddenly grinned. "Not yet." Mallory burst out laughing.
"I have no doubt you'll soon uncover every secret this planet has, Docs. Just don't forget to let the rest of us know what you find out."
Someone's stomach rumbled loudly.
"I agree," Kellen commented. "I'm hungry, too. Do we have any more of that green jellyfish left?"
Sandow pulled several strips from his pouch and passed them around. Kellen stared at the grayish piece she was handed, then noticed how Kyber broke his into two parts,
tucking one into the small bag hanging from his belt. "This is all that's left, people," the doctor informed them. "I strongly advise you don't drink anything for at least half an hour after eating. That'll give your stomach time to absorb the nutrients and leave you feeling full for a longer period of time, or at least until we can find another food source." Fullgrass held his canteen upside down to show it was empty. "We also need to find a water source." "I need to pee," they all loudly interrupted. "Are you going to force me to go here? Or can you at least untie me long enough to find a suitable place?" Kellen glanced around the cavern. Unlike the small apartment-like room where she discovered the Neverwild version of a toilet beneath the flooring, the ground here was packed dirt. "Could make use of a corner in here," Fullgrass suggested. "Cover it up with dirt when we're finished." "Are you leaving the fire to burn itself out? Would that be wise?" Jules asked. Sandow turned around. "He's got a point. It would be better if we aimed into the pit and used our urine to help put out the fire." Kellen raised a hand. "Great, but I'm not going to risk singeing my tush. I'll use the corner, thank you. I'll take my turn after the rest of you are done." Kellen exited into the corridor as the men and Phoenicians relieved themselves. When Dayal joined her in the hallway, she noticed his hands were left untied, but Mallory remained on his heels. The engineer caught her raised eyebrows. "He's too much of a burden if he's bound," the man told her. Gavir came up behind the men, a makeshift torch in his hand. The Phoenician gave a little growl and prodded the Terran commander. "If you try to run, you'd better be faster than us." Kellen got the impression Dayal wasn't going to risk having his arms re-tied behind his back by doing something stupid like running away. Besides, there were too many dangerous entities out there, and the ex-commander had no weapons other than rocks to protect himself if he got accosted by one of those creatures. Once all of the men had gathered, she went inside to do her business and rejoined them. A quick glance around told her the count was off. "Where's Mazapa?" "He went ahead to see if the entrance to the vast cavern was clear," Kyber answered. Without further explanation, the Phoenician took the lead. Kellen helped Dox collect his gear and followed with Fullgrass and Tojun watching their backs. The other two Phoenicians also carried crude torches, bowl-shaped stones that contained several burning rocks. When they reached the doorway, the Phoenician with the black and brown fur wasn't there. Kyber slipped through the opening, then returned a few moments later. In that brief amount of time, his own jet black pelt was covered in water droplets that glittered in the torchlight. "He's at the entrance to the apartment tunnels. He'll watch from there to see if that creature appears from the underground lake and warn us if it does." They exited the corridor, emerging into the vast cave that held the two lakes. The sound of water falling from the upper one to the smaller one was thunderous. Kellen spotted the immense sail-like sheet that spanned the falls and marveled at how well the material was constructed to continue to take that kind of pounding and still produce power through where it was attached to the two poles standing on opposite sides. The thought that this hydroelectric plant remained online for perhaps eons after this planet's inhabitants had disappeared was a monument to its creators and builders. Jules pointed to a figure standing atop a ledge. At this distance, the Phoenician appeared tiny. "There he is. He's waving his arms. Is that to warn us?" They all paused to watch. Presently, Mazapa made a come forward gesture. "It's clear," Kyber announced, "but we must hurry." The ground was mushy, the rocks slippery from the constant mist. Dayal lost his footing and landed heavily on his knees, but pushed away their offers to help him back onto his feet. At one point,
Kellen nearly skidded along the narrow trail, but a strong hand grabbed the back of her shirt, preventing her from falling. She gave Sandow a grateful smile and kept going. When they reached the tower-like pole on this side of the lake, Kyber stopped and declared a brief rest, for which she was grateful. It was Jules who voiced what she'd been thinking as they climbed. "We're heading upward. I never realized this was on a grade." "It's not so steep as to be noticeable," Mallory, the ex-engineer, noted. "But your calves will not thank you afterwards." Kavir pressed water from his pelt, then shook himself. "I'll be glad when we reach drier quarters." The others agreed. "We don't have much further to go," Kyber promised. "Come, we need to push on." Getting to her feet, Kellen glanced around. Their numbers were short, and a coldness penetrated her chest. "Guys, where's Docs?" The rest checked the area, but the little man was nowhere to be seen. They spread out, but not too far. Moving closer to the drop-off, Kellen cupped her hands around her mouth and called out, "Docs! Where are you?" Unexpectedly, a fur-covered hand clapped over her mouth. At the same time, Kyber hissed in her ear. "There, by the pole." Everyone froze in place. Several yards down the embankment, where the huge tower was located, they could see the tiny figure moving about the structure. Judging by Dox's size against the pole, they could estimate how large the generator was. Kellen squinted. "What is he doing?" She felt Kyber moving away, tugging on her shoulder and urging her to back up. "No sound. No one call out," the Phoenician ordered in a low voice. Kellen sensed his dread. The same time, the gargantuan figure rose from the depths of the lake and turned in their direction. "Nobody move," Sandow whispered, barely loud enough to be heard. Kellen rolled her eyes up over at where Kyber stood behind her. The others remained frozen like statues as the lake creature wove its massive head from side to side. Water poured off its greenish, glistening skin in small torrents. She kept her voice low as she watched the thing ponderously move through the deep lake, sending waves splashing up and over the rocky ledges as it paddled closer toward them. Having the Phoenician protecting her was comforting. She knew he would give his life to save hers, but her fear now was for the odd little man 100 yards away, who was single-mindedly working on whatever the hell it was that had his undivided attention. "Kyber, Docs doesn't see." "I know," he murmured. The creature undulated closer to the towers, and the huge sheet-like net that was stretched across the lip of the falls. From the depths of its long serpentine throat came a sound that was part scream, part scraping noise that dragged through Kellen's brain like a magnet in an electrical field. She winced from the pain, clenching her pants in her fists to keep from clutching her ears and falling to the ground. Behind her, she felt Kyber shudder at the sound, but he remained unmoving, as impossible as it almost was. At the tower's base, they saw Docs finally realize the danger he was in as the monster drew closer. The figure stilled. "We can't let him get to him," she insisted in a soft voice. "We have to do something. Distract it. Something." She was on the verge of leaping forward to wave her arms and yell at the thing when Dox's figure disappeared. Literally disappeared. She gasped. The little man hadn't moved, yet he was gone. Kellen blinked to clear her vision and stared at the tower, hoping to see him peering around the base or maybe from a hidden door they hadn't noticed. "There's the other one," Gavir hissed. "Another one?"
Her heart leaped into her throat as a second creature, the same species as the first one, lifted its long neck into the air. But unlike the first monster, it was in the lower lake, on the other side of the grid net. The two behemoths roared at each other, jabbing with their open maws, but never breaching the net, never crossing over or beneath it. "It's like they've learned not to touch it," Fulgrath murmured. "Bet it packs one hell of a wallop," they all dryly surmised. Jules snorted. "I wonder if the beings who built that thing knew they were separating the two." "Lower your voices," Sandow instructed tersely. "Let's hope we remain as invisible as docks to them." Minutes passed. The two creatures eventually stopped their posturing and slid back under the waters. Kellen felt her muscles melt as the things and the danger vanished. Fulgrath motioned to the area where they knew the corridors leading to the apartments were located. "We have to keep moving. Those creatures could resurface at any time." "Not without docks," Kellen argued. "Don't worry about docks," Jules advised. "I'm sure he'll catch up with us eventually." She glanced over at Mallory, who nodded in agreement. The engineer had worked closely with the genetically modified man. The crew member often teased Mallory, claiming the man had adopted docks and often referred to the pair as father and son. Fortunately, Mallory didn't mind their comments, and docks was known to be fond of the older man. If anyone knew docks, it was Mallory. Nodding her acquiescence, Kellen regathered docks' materials and fell in line behind Jules. Again, Kyber took the lead. Once they reached the upper ledges, the going became less strenuous. Presently, they paused in front of a doorway she didn't recognize. She gave Kyber a questioning look, but he was following Masapa, who was waiting for them at the entrance. The Phoenician opened the mud-splattered wooden door, and they filed inside. Once they were all within the narrow corridor, they slumped to the floor to rest. Mallory remained by the partly open doorway to keep an eye out for their errant crew member.
"Terran Doctor, please explain how you knew movement would give away our presence to the lake monster," Kavir asked.
Sandow scratched his head.
"It wasn't so much as knowing as it was an educated guess."
"A guess?" Jules inquired with a touch of awe.
"Based on rudimentary biology," Sandow added. "Yes, I know those things out there are nothing like what we've ever encountered before, but you have to admit, we all wouldn't have been able to find shelter in time before one or more of us became that thing's breakfast."
"Go on, Doctor," Kellen urged.
"I've been studying the creatures we've met so far, and I think I've figured out a few things. Of course, I could be completely wrong on all counts, but did you notice the placement of the lake monster's eyes?"
"It had eyes?" Fulgrath inquired.
Sandow grinned.
"Exactly. It had eyes. 6 of them, but they were very small and located in a semicircle around the top of the head. That made me think that eyesight is secondary to the creature. It can't pinpoint its prey directly, but uses general movement to detect where its prey may be."
"Like it's nearsighted," Kellen commented.
"Yes, like it's very nearsighted."
"You also made it clear we needed to be as quiet as possible," Kyber reminded him. "Are you thinking the monster has keener hearing?"
"That I cannot be certain of, but if its eyesight is secondary, it's very possible its hearing is its strongest sense. I felt it would be in our favor if we went with all options to protect ourselves until we can glean a better understanding about what's on this planet and how they survive. Personally, I think hearing is major with them. I'm also leaning towards smell as their second best and movement third. Maybe radar, vibrations, hell, even heat."
The man shrugged.
Sorry, I can't be more specific at the moment. But it's a start. Kellen flashed him a grateful smile. Thanks, Doc. You saved our butts this time around. A rattling outside the door threw them back into defensive mode until a familiar red-headed figure filled the crack in the opening. Mallory softly growled and reached out to pull the little man inside, closing the entrance behind him.
What in hell are you doing by the tower? The engineer demanded hotly.
Kellen could tell he wasn't as angry as he was upset by Doc's actions. Doc made a sorrowful face.
Sorry. Needed to charge it.
Charge it? Charge what? They all countered. You need to stick with the rest of us and stop going off on your own. Understand?
The ex-commander's harsh tone had an immediate effect on the young man. Kelly could see Doc's mentally and emotionally retreating, and she reached over to drape an arm across the man's shoulders. She started to reply to Dale's comment when Fulgrath cleared his throat.
Excuse me, sir, but if I recall correctly, you're no longer in charge of this party.
Dale stared at them. Sandow patted the man's shoulder, but was shrugged off.
Sorry, Hod, but you were dethroned, or don't you remember?
The physician gently asked.
No, I don't, Dayal spat back, getting to his feet. This is still a military operation, and that means I'm in charge.
He turned to glare at Kyber and Tojan.
Now will someone explain to me why we have the enemy in our midst? Fulgrath! Cooter!
Dayal glanced around the dim corridor.
Lieutenant, sound out, where are you? Why isn't he here with the rest of us?
Cooter's gone AWOL, Jules murmured. They all whirled on him. Behind her, Kelly could sense Kyber's tensing as the man grew more incensed. It was clear to everyone that they all was slowly but inevitably becoming unhinged. A few feet away, he saw Fulgrath reach inside his pocket and extract something. Sandow stood and held up his hands in an attempt to calm the man down.
Listen to me, Hod. Commander, Dr. Sandow, address me correctly when in front of the crew.
I am addressing you correctly, Sandow informed him in his best physician's voice.
Listen to me. You're not yourself. You're stressed out, and you took a hard blow to the head when we crash-landed on this world.
They all looked both ways down the tunnel.
There was no crash landing, Doctor. This is a recon party. It's you who is stressed out. Fulgrath, give me an update on our status.
The ex-weapons master slowly rose and approached the man. Currently, we're about a mile or so beneath this planet's surface. We've been following of various tunnels and trails to get this far. The indigenous population ranks at Code Red, and the sentient population of spirits died out some time ago. Thankfully, there's plenty of water, and so far, we've managed to find some food that our systems can tolerate.
I'm going to stop there and see if we have anybody who... Okay. We are... I'm putting the new word. Okay. Da-da-da. Let's see. And my winner for a copy of this book is Susan. Susan, you have won a copy of Neverwild, Book 2. And thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4 people, thank you for emailing in and asking to be put in the hat. Sue, I will get back with you after the show is over with. I'll email you, and we can find out what version you want. In the meantime, the rest of you, thank you for listening in. Thank everybody who put your hat name in, wanted to put your name in the hat. My name is Linda Mooney. This is Other Worlds of Romance on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for listening again. Have a great Thanksgiving holiday if you're here in the U.S. And if not, the rest of you in other countries, if you're listening in,
Have a wonderful weekend, rest of the week. We'll see you next week. Take care. Good night. Bye-bye.